It's time for Twig. This week in Google, we've got a big show for you. Jeff Jarvis and Matthew Ingram are here. We'll talk about a surprising revelation by Facebook right as the show began. Also, the Google changelog. And what's this? A new device has entered the studio? We'll talk all about it next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twig. This Week in Google, episode 483, recorded Wednesday, November 21st, 2018. Punch me in the hövding. This Week in Google is brought to you by Slide Belts by Brig Taylor. High-quality, comfortable ratchet belts that are easy to adjust. If you want a better belt, go to slidebelts.com/twit and use the code TWIT for 20% off. And by Brex, the first corporate credit card for startups. Get the card free, and TWIT listeners get Brex card fees waived in perpetuity at brex.com/twit. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans, introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Rate Shield Approval locks your rate up for up to 90 days while you shop. It's a real game changer. Learn more and get started at rocketmortgage.com/twig. It's time for Twig this week at Google, the show, the pre-Thanksgiving edition of This Week in Google. Stacey Higginbotham is off building her Gantt chart. Remember that, Jeff? Last year she had a Gantt chart for her holiday preparations. Yes. Jeff Jarvis does not.
Well, she's got to tell all the robots what to do.
Yeah, not a non-trivial task in a home like Stacey's. Jeff Jarvis, professor of journalism. He's actually the Leonard Tow professor of journalism.
I'm talking like that because I got a crown.
Oh, I love that. Do you have the temp? Do you have the temporary on right now?
I have the temp on now.
Oh,
yeah.
I hate that.
I'm running out of body parts, man. They're taking them all.
BuzzMachine.com is where he blogs. That other guy laughing? Why, that's the famous Canadian Matthew Ingram. He writes for the Columbia Review of Journalism, or Columbia Journalism Review. He's chief digital writer.
You're hirsutely different, Matthew.
Yeah, it's a winter thing. It's a playoff
game. I have, Matthew, the perfect thing for both of us.
What's that?
If you go, let me hold on. Yeah, I gotta find. Hold on, one second. Oh no, where to go?
Oh, the lights.
Throw in the punchline. The lights in the beard.
The lights go in the beard. Yeah.
Christmas lights in your beard.
Yeah. Okay. I'm gonna try growing like a big mountain man. You know,
I feel like I should grow. I got the gray beards on the show today. I should ask you tough questions.
Well, we're two old white guys in hoodies trying to act young.
Black.
Black hoodies.
I'm actually wearing
black
hoodies.
There we go.
Oh my. Oh no, please. Yeah. Please do not do that.
I'm
Christmas
thinking about
lights
it.
For your beard. But that means
they flash.
Yeah.
Well, if you do that, let me know, because I will send you the, I got those eyelashes. I never had the guts to wear them that light up.
What
that
eyelashes?
Was a Kickstarter. Oh,
that was one of Leo's best Kickstarters.
Silly.
Were they Christmas eyelashes?
Still waiting for the unicorn that farts rainbows. That never happened. They were, I don't remember. It was dumb. The sad thing, and I bet this happens, is not unusual, is they had it on Kickstarter. I put in some money. And then, of course, they were immediately copied by Chinese knockoffs, which you can get on Amazon for a tenth the price. I had to wait for mine. It was a bad.
Did you get them, though?
Bad all around. Yeah, I got them. They're just.
Oh, okay.
They're called F-dot lashes or flashes.
Okay.
Fine, fresh, fierce,
wow.
Interactive LED lashes. They raised $113,000 some time ago.
And they laughed at to the bank.
Have you ever worn them?
No. What would I do with these?
Well, why did you buy them?
I don't.
I think we embarrassed him into doing it. I think it was one of those cases where, you know, because the game is, can we get Leo to buy something on the show?
You still have not convinced
me to buy.
Well,
that's not much of a game.
No, it isn't. No, I never bought a Rodimatic. I have some.
I want you to get a Rodimatic. No, yes. We're gonna... The staff.
You know what? I will not be getting. I know the staff does want the Rodimatic. I will not be getting smart contact lenses that can tell my blood sugar.
Nope.
Now, my initial take on this was,
And I actually mentioned this on the radio show. Once again, Silicon Valley overpromises and underdelivers. But somebody said to me, no, this is actually a good thing. Because unlike Theranos, Verily, which is Google's Alphabet's health science division, once they figured out it can't be done, announced it and said, yeah, we're not going to do this.
Harder than we thought.
That's totally unlike Silicon Valley.
Right. So I have to revise my initial disdain to say, well, at least they had the, you know, the courtesy to say, nah, that we talked about this.
But yeah. It
turns out to be a lot harder to measure blood glucose in your tears because it's not consistent, I guess. They thought diabetics cried sugar, but apparently they don't. So this was
Sounds like a kind of dog ate my homework sort of excuse to me. Like, why not just try harder? I mean, come on.
It says in their post, they're going to continue with other products. We remain committed to improving the lives of people with diabetes, including through improved methods for inexpensive and unobtrusive glucose sensing. This is the holy grail for health sciences, is a way to measure glucose without a pinprick.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, Apple has made a big deal about how someday the Apple Watch will be able to do that. And no one has yet to be able to come up with non-invasive. The best they can come up with is constant monitoring with that little patch. Yeah. But it has little filaments that you inject. It's still.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. I think my flashes are here. Where'd you get those?
Put them on.
You already own them?
Oh, yeah.
And you didn't tell me? That's Father Robert Ballas there in effigy. He's now at the Vatican. If the Pope saw this.
Not good.
Bad news. I'm Father Robert. So he already did this as a project.
Is he living in Rome?
Oh, yeah.
Like at the Vatican?
He overlooks.
Really?
St. Mark's. What is it? St.
Can
Peter's?
Can we get like insider Peter's. Visits?
Yes.
What what is he doing? Just being a priest?
Last I heard. Okay, so Father Robert Ballester is a Jesuit. We called him the digital Jesuit. Worked for us for several years as a reporter and host of our shows. He's a great guy. He's a total geek. The whole time he worked for us, the Vatican was pulling at him. At one point, they offered him a bishopric. That doesn't sound right, but I think that's the right word. They offered him a bishopric, and he turned it down because he would have had to become not a Jesuit. It would have been a different... whatever they call that, brotherhood.
Order or
designation.
Order.
Yeah.
Order is a good name. And the Jesuits are a very, you know, they have some strict rules.
They sure do.
Yeah. And the Pope is a Jesuit. So that's kind of the connection, is that he's one of us, right? And so eventually, you know, at some point, if you're a priest, you can't really keep saying no to Rome. If Rome wants you, you got to go, right? They answer as the old rye bread commercials say, or the old kosher hot dogs say, to a higher authority. Wasn't that the kosher hot dogs? We answered to a higher authority.
Higher authority.
So the higher authority said, you're getting out here. I think he's in charge of some sort of outreach kind of a thing. But honestly, I think what he really does, and I hope I'm not talking out of school when I say this, but because he is relatively young, I mean, they're all 80, and
he runs the Twitter account, or
he's actually represents for them, and he's a geek. He understands. Yes, he literally runs social media, and he's the guy they run stuff through to make sure that it's you know.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's a big job.
Cool. Yeah, very cool.
And but he was telling me, he's such a geek, that they have, what is it called, a conclave? They have an event.
Yeah.
The synod or something, when all the cardinals and everybody get together, and he's there. He's not a cardinal, he's just a priest, but he's there. And they all speak Italian. So he said the languages of Rome are Latin, somewhat, Italian, and I can't remember. Where is Francis from? He's Argentinian, so I think Spanish, right?
Spanish, yeah.
So those are the languages. And his Spanish is very good. His Latin is mezza mezza, and his Italian is the weakest. So he took the Bing translator and put it on the table in front of him on a smartphone, and it would listen. He could kind of understand Italian. The Bing translator would translate it and text. It was simultaneous translation. I mean, this is kind of remarkable. It was good enough for him to follow what was going on.
He could have avoided the 30 years war this way, yeah.
Yeah, although the last communication we have from him is, I'm being sent off to study Italian.
Oh. Well, it shouldn't be that hard. I mean, to speak Italian, you just speak Spanish badly.
That's what I always thought. Or you add an O to an English word, like aeroporto.
Exactly.
It's not that hard. Anyway, he's great. And he did say, if you go out, at least he said this to me and Lisa, and I'm sure it applies to you guys, that he will get you in places that,
awesome.
They're like the catacombs.
Wow.
Like the catacombs.
Yeah. I wanted to go there last time I was there, but it was closed.
Yeah.
Plus, I would just like to see Padre and have a nice pasta and wine with him and know that I'm talking to somebody who's in the Vatican. That'd be just.
You won't have pasta with him. He said we eat spaghetti every meal. terrible. He's so
we'll go for sushi or something.
Yeah, go for sushi. He'd be much happier. He said we live within 500 feet of some of the best restaurants in the world. And we eat bad spaghetti every day.
We'll get a hamburger.
I could tell Padre's stories
for a
long time.
Padre, if you're watching, I'll take you out to dinner.
We love Father Robert. We miss him. And he'll be back in January. He comes back for CES. He got permission to come back 4 times a year for big guys.
I'll take him for steak Florentine. Have you ever had that?
No. I've heard of it.
So I made the mistake of ordering it at a restaurant in Perugia. And someone said it's a big steak, and I said I like big steaks. I'm a little upset that I haven't been able to get a nice big steak in Italy. And they said, well, it's a really big steak. I thought, great, I like big steaks.
It was probably
22 ounces.
It's the whole porterhouse.
The size of your head.
Is it a porterhouse?
Yeah,
it's the whole porterhouse. So normally you'd get a T-bone out of that, you'd get filet out of that, you'd get ribeye out of that.
The whole thing.
And it's served with beans as if you needed something else. And cannellini beans and lemon wedges. Wow.
I was there with Bobby Ghosh, who was, I think, the international editor at Time for a while. Anyway, he also ordered one, which...
Yeah,
and we should have just shared one.
Well, I've had these, but you have for two.
Yeah,
and they carve it up.
Good idea.
Yeah,
good idea.
We have strayed far.
Boy, have we ever
and wide, but that's okay. Boy, it's going to be that kind of show, and sometimes it is.
Squirrel.
I got one. Squirrel. I got a good one. Let me take a break, and then when we come back, I'll give you a good one for both of you, which is what's going on in Europe with the link thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You'll be talking about that for a couple hours, so let's get a commercial in first. It's time for a word from Slide Belts. This is a great holiday gift. I am, like many people, belts never served me very well because the problem with belts is that, it's basically caveman technology. Take a piece of leather, punch 5 holes in it, and hope one of them works. But the problem is, it's either too tight or too loose. Your pants fall down or you can barely breathe. It's not a great solution. Slide Belts is a modern world solution to an age-old problem, how to keep your pants up. Slide Belts are a great gift for dad.
Upside down, Leo.
Yeah, see, because it says twit. That's how you know, right? they don't have, by the way, this is the buckle and the belt come separately because the belts are interchangeable. And they have all kinds of belts, everything from... beautiful full grain and top grain leather like this to canvas, animal friendly, vegan. So they call them straps because they're kind of like watch bands. So what you do is you get your belt and you put it in the buckle, and you can get the buckles engraved. They come in a variety of looks. This is the chrome engraved buckle. You see, I put it in there and now it's, but these are easy to change. So, you get a buckle that says, twit or whatever you want on it. And then I love this. When you put the belt on, it's got these ratchets, 32 of them. This is a patented technology. Listen to the sound. The belt. Now, it's really good. It fits much better than a belt with just a few holes in it. And notice, that's when you're putting it on, it goes. But when you're loosening it after a big Thanksgiving Day dinner, it's silent. So no one will know. They just hear this in the morning, and then they don't hear anything. As the evening progresses, I love Slide Belts. 32 adjustments means it'll fit you better than any belt you've ever worn before. And because they have so many different designs and styles, they're great for around the house, at the office, for holiday parties. Let me show you another one. I love this one. This is the antique brass. This is how they come too, like in gift sets. So they're beautiful. Antique brass, and this is the navy canvas. It's very pretty. There's one other buckle I want to show you. If you go to slidebeltsplural.com/twit, you can get 20% off your order when you use the offer code TWIT. You might want to order, yes, the Survival Belt 2.0. It looks like an innocuous belt buckle, but should you be out camping and you need to light a fire or open a bottle or have a flashlight, utility belt looks like a normal belt, but look, there's a knife in it. It's sharp, too. There is a flashlight in it. It's very bright, despite its tiny size. And this is a fire starter, so you can use a knife to set sparks on the fire starter. This is literally, you could be lost in the wilderness with nothing but a belt. You might look weird, but you'd be able to cook, eat, hunt small animals. This would be a great gift, a survival for, you know, kids coming back from college, groomsmen, if you got a wedding coming up. Slide belts by Brig Taylor are high quality, but they have a variety of prices. They have some really nice gifts, by the way, in the gift set tab, but I have to tell you, those are already discounted, so the 20% off does not apply to those, but every other belt. And they now offer watches with similar swappable watch bands, which is really nice, too. All slide belts come with a one-year warranty, free exchanges, and no-hassle returns. It is a great gift idea. Go to slidebelts.com/twit. Use the offer code TWIT at checkout, and you'll get 20% off your order. And it's not too late to shop for the holidays. I think Hanukkah's early this year, right? So hustle over there. slidebelts.com/twit. So, they tried it in Spain, and it didn't work so hot.
In Germany, kind of first. Mm-hmm. Do you know what that was called?
Leistungszeitschriften haben.
Die Leistungsschutzrecht.
Yeah.
Shall we play the reggae?
There is a song. Google News is now making noise that EU... So this... I'm conflating this maybe with the copyright law. I don't know.
It's two parts of the same laws, chapters 11 and 13.
I see. Right.
Articles 11 clauses. 13.
Okay, yeah. So Article 13 would introduce the copyright.
Article 11 is...
It's Article 11 would introduce the link tax.
Link tax.
Yeah.
So the link tax... So news publishers in Spain complained that Google was free riding on their content because in the search results, they would include snippets from the article, not the whole article, right?
Yeah.
Just snippets.
Yeah.
And they said, well, we want, Google should pay us for the use of those snippets. To which Google replied, fine, see ya, and left Spain, which meant all of those newspapers drastically lost traffic because you couldn't Google them. Right?
Jeff is right. There was no Google News in Germany.
Yeah, so in Germany first, they tried to define a snippet. How much was more than less than a snippet, and they failed. They tried to do all kinds of things in the law. At the end of the day, basically what happened was, in the German law, they said that Google has to have permission to do this. And Google said, we're back. And so publishers tried to withdraw their permission and not do it. They found after, I think it was 2 to 3 weeks, this was a disaster. Yeah. They all gave Google permission.
Axel Springer said they lost 30%, 40% of their traffic.
And by the way, no love lost between Axel Springer and Google.
Oh, God, no. Axel Springer started wars against Google.
Yeah, they may be the number one enemy of Google.
They didn't allow any permission structure. They just said, you must pay. And that's when Google said, no, we won't. We can't. We're sending new traffic. We're sending new people. No, we're not paying for content.
I'm trying to play the other side here. It is their content in the snippet, but it's not like it's the whole article, right? It's just a... Right.
In fact, Leo, one of the things I've seen research on is that, because the argument is the snippet is too long, it's too much content. The truth is, what I've seen in research and what I've learned from my own experience is the longer the excerpt, the better the link performance.
So what you want as the publisher is that somebody clicks that link. Yeah, so the thesis is, well, if you put the snippet, they're going to read the story and say, oh, fine, I got it, and not click the link.
Which does happen.
Yeah, of course. If you see a headline that says Matthew Ingram grows beard, and I don't want to know any more, sorry, Matthew, than that, then, yeah, I've learned everything I needed to learn.
Right.
And the headline did that. That's been true forever. It's like, well, it's walking back to the newsstand.
Is it what I'm seeing right here? I just searched for Khashoggi. And in this search results for USA Today, there's the headline. And then there's three lines with ellipses. So they're doing some sort of editorializing, right? They're snippeting. It's more than just taking the first three lines of the article. I guess. I don't know.
Click on the article.
So number one, USA Today. Breitbart is number two. No ellipsis, but three lines. And then there's a hashtag news about
Khashoggi. Go up to the top, Leo, and click on the news link for this story, the very top. I'm pointing to my screen as if you can see it.
Yeah, I get it, right. So this is the snippets they're talking about.
This is more. Look how short those are.
They're a sentence.
Right.
If that.
Yeah, because they're all ending with an ellipsis because they don't actually get to the period. So
you get the headline, you get a little bit of the lead.
President Donald Trump acknowledged Tuesday that Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman could have known of the murder of ..
Right.
Just enough to tell you if this search result is what you're looking for.
Yeah, and the truth is, the publishers are not as stupid as they seem here. They're not trying to get paid for content. They're just trying to get any way they can to get some of Google's money because they lost money by not offering advertisers a full deal. So they're just they're trying to blackmail Google or Facebook into paying the money because alms for the poor.
But they have
and we should point out this has been going on since 2006.
Yes.
So Belgium, I think, was the first one to complain. But then it spread basically throughout Europe. Spain was the first one to really put the pedal to the floor, I think. Google yanked the entire service. But this is a debate that's been going on for over a decade.
So, by the way, I just went to DuckDuckGo in the news section. They do the same exact thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Every search engine does
because the headline is probably not enough to give you an eye. And they do it, by the way, if I search for Twit, they do the same thing because the headline isn't enough to give. Okay, this is why I don't like DuckDuckGo. I search for Twit, and what do I get? Man trapped in wild birds using glue and put them in cages just like Mr. Twit.
Come on, that's a relevant result.
Well, these are ridiculous.
Why did you do that?
Why did I do what? Trap birds with glue?
Yeah.
I didn't. No, I'm not Mr. Twit. I'm Chief Twit.
Public, you know what I look at, Leo, is if you go to the New York Times
public
homepage,
urge,
what do they
do? I'm not through. Oh, public okay, urge sorry. To listen for Twit to woo amid concern over tawny owl decline.
You did kind of take that word from the birds.
I think the bird took it from me, but that's another story. So Twit
feckless
hits the
twit.
Fan.
Nice.
Feckless Twit.
Feckless Twit.
Adam Best scolds Representative Scalise. Twit hits the fan. Trump goes nuclear. Kansas City twit. Mom, an online hit after telling off prissy Twit.
Anyway. So the excerpts.
Yes.
It's ridiculous to charge money for this. It's ridiculous on its face. It's what
well,
Jeremy Bentham called nonsense on stilts.
And
I mean, it's just a ridiculous
that's a
argument.
Good line. Nonsense on stilts. It doesn't. It's also they have no leverage because Google has all the leverage in this relationship, right? All Google has to do is what they did to Spain.
Well, and Google said you have a choice if you're a publisher. You can include something in your robots.txt file that prevents Google from indexing your site.
And they're not doing that.
Problem solved.
So yeah. So that is another answer. So nevertheless, this is probably going to become the law, right? This new copyright law.
It's headed rapidly there, yeah.
It seems that way, yeah.
And that's our Article 11, right, Matthew? So Article 13 is also dangerous because it's the one that's aimed at YouTube and makes the publisher, it takes away all the safe harbors and makes the publisher responsible for anything that's put up that might have copyright. And so this is going to kill the meme. This literally is going to kill the modern day alphabet of the meme. Because
so it's like the DMCA didn't exist. There's no protection. anything that's even remotely copyrightable, you have to prevent it from being uploaded if you can. Not just take it down when someone says it's copyrighted, but prevent it from being uploaded in the first place.
Here's YouTube's response, hashtag save your internet. Article 13 is written by the European Parliament. Oh, wait a minute. That's a snippet. I'll just leave that out. by the way, we do snippets too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we don't honor robots.txt. So Google's in a better position than we are. Is this going to pass?
Probably.
As of now, yeah. Yeah.
It seems that way.
And so Google is, as you started off the snippet in here, Richard Gingras, the senior vice president for Google News, was in a European tour this week where he, to his friends, he was putting up photos of him eating oysters on the Seine. But to the world, he was saying, you do this, I pull Google News out of Europe.
Not Google search results, Google News.
Google News.
He didn't say he would. He said that Google would consider it if this happens.
It would be a shame if something happened to your nice news.
Right. Nice news index you got there.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, mind you, because of GDPR, the General Data Protection Regulations, when I was just in Europe last week, I tried to read the LA Times. I can't.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of them have cut off because they don't want to go to the effort on GDPR.
Yeah.
And it's not worth it. It's just really not worth it because they have no way to monetize European readers. So screw them. So the web is balkanized, not from China, but from Europe.
I think one of the risks with, particularly with the copyright end of it, is there is in the U.S. and in other countries like Canada, the term fair use, or in Canada and Britain, it's called fair dealing. A sort of clause that basically allows you to use copyrighted works in certain ways. For artistic purposes, for education, for criticism. Effectively, this copyright regulation would make fair use or fair dealing not exist. So you would not be allowed to use any type of copyrighted content, even a tiny, tiny bit, for some alternate purpose like artistic or education.
Or comment or satire.
Right. Right.
Or promotion.
This throws fair use out of Europe.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty much.
So, you know, and I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago when we did the Apple, the live stream of the Apple event, which we do every time Apple has a keynote. We stream the keynote and comment on top of it. And our defense is that's fair use because it's for commentary purposes. And as you may remember, YouTube got a takedown request from Apple. Not to take down the edited video, but to kill our live stream, which killed our live stream for 2 weeks. We defended it. We said no, it's not. And Google said, okay, well, if we don't get a response from Apple in 16 days, you'll be back up. So 2 weeks later, we're back up on YouTube Live.
Oh, because
Apple didn't. Well, yeah, but
it's still scary.
It's terrifying because, I mean, it definitely has a chilling effect because. Apple could take us down for 2 weeks basically at any time. And that's a punishment because it's not just the Apple event. It's in our entire live stream on YouTube Live for 2 or 3 weeks. And so that's a significant burden.
You should be able to go for Apple for a straight of train.
Well, our defense is it's fair use.
Yeah.
So in Europe, Apple could do the same thing, and there'd be no defense. You're done.
Right. You would have no appeal. And I think it's interesting. The last time I looked at fair use in the U.S., there was a ruling that I'm trying to remember the name of it, but effectively said that companies like Google or Apple or, you know, Time Warner have to consider fair use before they make a claim, not later have somebody say, hey, that's fair use. They actually have to actively consider it. And if it's shown that they didn't, that can basically ruin a case for them.
There's pretty strong protections. Yeah, that's unusual because really, my understanding of fair use has always been it's a defense so that they can stop you, they can shut you down. Your defense when you go to court, Your Honor, this was fair use. And then the judge has three different criteria they're supposed to use.
Four.
four different criteria they're supposed to use to, you know, how much of the material was used, if there was a loss of value to the company, things like that.
Transformative change.
If it's transformative, yep. And so then the judge rules. So the fair use is a defense. It's
right.
But this sounds like it's a little bit more now, which is good. They're strengthening it in the U.S.
That's why this decision was important, because it specifically said you can't just take everything down and then wait for somebody to claim fair use. You have to actively consider it.
So this is part of the problem is this, the internet's so global, as as goes the EU to some degree, so goes the rest of the world. If the, whatever the lowest standard is, right? I mean,
that's the risk. I mean, that's the risk. You've got, you know, the EU is a lot of countries. They are maybe not as economically important individually as the US, but together that's, it's a pretty big market, especially if you want to expand outside of the U.S. And so maybe, you know, some companies might decide, well, we just won't have anything to do with the EU, but that's not a choice that a global company can make.
So what? So YouTube, I mean, this is what Google's always done, is they have different rules. This is what GDPR did, although you can see how GDPR leaks, in this case, in mostly good ways, into our lives in the U.S., Facebook, for instance, has to offer a feature, at least to people in the EU, to delete their data from Facebook. And most companies like Facebook just say, well, we'll make this available to everybody. Is that distracting, having a
I'm hypnotized.
I should probably take that.
Only a little.
Father Robert is blinking his antennae on me here. of course, we have no say about this. According to the Guardian article, the proposals were overwhelmingly backed by members of the European Parliament in September, but Google is hoping to influence the European Commission and EU member states before it's confirmed.
And the problem here, of course, is that publishers and media companies are using all their political capital to try to get this passed.
Right.
This is protectionist legislation.
Right. Well, I will continue to follow it. It seems like the news is worse and worse, however.
Yes.
And I think in a way, you know, that and the link tax are both the theme that sort of runs through them, is lots of big publishers, music companies, sort of content owners feel like they've been getting ripped off since the internet was invented. And so all of these things are ways of them trying to claw back some of the money that they feel Google and Facebook and other companies are making at their expense.
Which, of course, is not the case, because it's just Google and Facebook and company just competed in a new reality. When I was in I was in Munich a few weeks ago and spoke to the Munich Medientage, Media Days, and the whole presentation was me. Unfortunately, there was nobody in the audience, so nobody heard it. But it was me going through every one of these cases of legislation and regulation and court cases lately, and saying, here's the unintended consequences. The effort was to take away power from Google and Facebook. In each case, it gave them more power. And, you know, take GDPR. American publishers can't afford to and don't bother with dealing with this, but Google and Facebook are the only companies that are big enough where it doesn't affect them. It's easy to do it. Fine. Okay, fine. We'll do it. Right to be forgotten. Google has more power. Netstay Gay, the hate speech law. Facebook has more power. They backfire in every way.
Yeah, I think the main thing with a lot of those rules is that Google and Facebook can afford to pay whatever is required to sort of get into, you know, to play with those play along with those rules. But lots of smaller companies can't, so they're just excluded from the market, which gives even more power to the large incumbents.
There's no chance that Google will give a pittance to these news companies.
No, none. Because what's the precedent that then sets?
Right.
Then I can, for Buzz Machine, I can say, I'm going to set a price, and Google, you've got to pay me. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, Google's not going to. And then, so Google will say, well, I guess we got to cut off Buzz Machine. And so you're not in search, and so we have a worse search. And so it ruins the web. That's what the Europeans are doing here. They are ruining the web.
You're ruining the web.
You're killing the open internet. And I think it's, you know, fair use is a sort of esoteric concept, and it's a sort of slippery legal concept. There's four factors. It's hard to explain.
Larry Lessig says fair use is the right to hire a lawyer.
Yeah, it's a defense.
You can't just say this is fair use and that isn't. Yeah. It's up to a court, et cetera. But the principle, like, think of all the artistic creations, you know, entire genres of music, like hip hop and rap, that have been created using samples from other media. That kind of thing would effectively be outlawed. The ability to remix bits and pieces of media has been a huge part of media, all kinds of media.
Although there have been many lawsuits by artists who've been sampled without permission.
There have.
And I kind of understand how artists feel. What you're saying, though, is, okay, if you're a creator, just keep in mind this is good for everybody and be a little less of a tight ass.
And obviously it depends on how you do it. I mean, if your song is, you know, 90% someone else's, a sample of someone else's song, then that seems over the top. But if you're Girl Talk or something like that, and you sample 100 different things and you hear tiny snippets of each,
right?
How is that not a new creation?
Well, should here's an interesting one of those? Example of this is Weird Al Yankovic, who writes parody songs. But the
rules for permission.
But what's interesting is he doesn't have to, because they're parodies, provided he's parodizing the song or the artist who performs or wrote the song. For instance, he couldn't take a Prince song and rewrite the lyrics and then make it be critical of the president.
Right.
That wouldn't be fair use. But if he uses it to parodize Prince, that's fair use.
He also, Weird Al, asks every artist before he does a parody of
also
it, which
polite.
He doesn't have to do.
That's he doesn't have to do it, but that's polite.
Yeah.
So polite to ask, but also if you're an artist and you are asked, it would be polite to give permission, because this is all about creative, you know, flow, and everybody, it's good for everybody if you allow creative flow. Otherwise, everything gets stopped up.
Another thing to say here is that, and Matthew, you and I in our business, is that if we were not copying from each other and quoting each other in news, we'd all be doomed. You as a columnist and critic, you spend your day, quote, snippeting others.
Well, as I point out, that's the whole Twit network.
Yeah.
We don't do any research.
No, we just leech. We are leeches.
We do no reportage.
I do sometimes have my own ideas, but no, I see,
you
but your point.
You know what I mean to say.
No, and we have our own ideas too, but we base it all upon
others. Not just
you,
but any newspaper out there, any news show
out
there.
Commentary is.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think there's to sort of take a completely, you know, copyright maximalist point of view, which is what this law would do, is really going to cut off a huge amount of creative work. Yes. I mean, will it stop pirates? Yes, but it will also stop anyone from using those things in a creative way.
Well, and I always say this when it comes down to stuff like this, it doesn't really stop pirates, because pirates are, by definition, criminals, and they don't care what the laws are. In fact, laws only stop honest people.
True.
Can I make a bumper sticker of that?
Yeah. Piracy almost always is not thwarted by any of this stuff, including copy protection, everything else, because pirates just circumvent blithely and go on, and it's never slowed it down.
If memes are criminalized, only criminals will produce memes.
And they'll all be on 8chan. pardon me for this Gutenbergian moment here, but part of the fundamental problem is that we still think in a Gutenberg notion of content, of an idea that what we're making is something to fill a container.
Right.
That's not what we're doing. And that's not what a news organization is. We're causing much of these problems. They are in the service business. They're using various tools to accomplish that service. But as long as they think that they're just in the business of making a product called content and it's theirs and they own it, it's not. The true value of what's there is the information inside, and you cannot copyright information. It's the last dying gasp of the old content industry. And they're trying to use government.
It's a pretty big gasp, though. I mean, if you think of, you know, the number of content companies that, as far as they're concerned, that their product is what matters. Not, I was just ranting about, this is sort of unrelated or tangentially related, but I was ranting about a piece I read at a respectable publication that I won't name because lots of places do it. A 1,200, probably 1,500 word article, really smart article, referred to all this stuff and did not link a single time to, this is on the internet, did not link a single time to anywhere, to the things they were describing, to anyone who had written about that thing. Because the idea is, it's just like Facebook. They want to keep you on their site as much as possible, and any links should only go to their stuff so that you will be trapped there, and then hopefully maybe you'll buy something. I mean, that's just such a fundamentally backwards idea. Anyway, makes me mad.
I don't know what we're going to do about it, but it's kind of up to the EU at this point, right?
Well, yeah. one thing it says, too, is that the other thing I try to say to Europeans is, who the hell is going to invest in anything related to the internet in Europe?
Well, that's interesting.
And they constantly complain and whine that, well, we don't have our Google. Well, the way you get a Google is by investing and risking. They're risk averse.
Yeah, I'm going to start on Twitter. A search engine in Europe.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no way you're going to invest there.
And I do think, you know, I have a lot of friends in Europe. I like Europe.
I love
Europe. This is not an anti-Europe comment, but it feels like some of the motivation, particularly for actions against Google and Facebook, is the feeling that they are American entities that are kind of stomping all over Europe and ruining everything.
Yeah, to be clear here, I'm not saying all of Europe, you know, save your, don't at me, but I am saying powerful European publishers and politicians are ruining the net. And we thought that China was the entity ruining the net, or that Russia was. Europe's doing damage here.
Oh, it's depressing.
It is depressing.
Here is...
Cancel the turkey. I'm not thankful.
Here is a scary... Here's something to be thankful for. Here is a scary robot that you won't see in production. This is a Shaft robot. Google, when Andy Rubin was still there, bought a lot of robotics companies like Boston Dynamics and Shaft. They sold off Boston Dynamics. They've been trying to sell Shaft because Google quite rightly realizes they got enough problems. They shouldn't get any creepier.
Mm-hmm.
They can't sell Shaft, so they're shutting it down. They tried.
It's nice and pink, though.
It's pink. That means it's
very friendly.
Yeah.
I wonder if I can get it on from eBay.
So the business side will be shuttered. Google says it's helping staff find new roles. Alphabet owns Shaft. Here's the DARPA Grand Challenge. 8 tasks and walking. All of this done by this robot. I guess, though, the research, I mean, I hope it's not, you know, dead. I mean, I hope that it, well, maybe I do. I don't know.
See, this is, I'm going to say it. This is,
techno
I'm
not saying
it's solely this. Yes, it is, because every time I hear somebody say, oh, that's creepy, it's a machine.
It's just a machine. And there is a reason you want bipedal robots, because as in this, you know, environment, they're designed for humans. They're designed for bipedal navigation. And so if a robot's coming in to rescue people, they need to be able to operate in an environment designed for people, like go upstairs and open doors and all of that stuff. And so
fire weapon.
Hey, yeah. Hey, knock it off.
Or disarm a weapon.
The good news, hey, I'll put a happy gloss on that. One would hope that if it's a robot firing a weapon, it's firing a weapon at another robot.
Mm-hmm.
Look, it can draw better circles than I can. Oh, that's my God, terrible. It just punched a hole in the door.
That's a terrible circle.
It's good enough. Look, it can turn wrenches. This is the DARPA Grand Challenge. So they design these challenges for robots, and this is the Shaft robot. Here, it's getting a hose. So that, again, is designed for a human, but it's able to get the hose and connect it.
Can it make a nice mutton, lettuce, and tomato sandwich?
Inevitably, if you could do the one, you could do the other. So
there was a story about a robot, a company that got a lot of investment to have robots make pizza. It got millions of dollars. I forget the name of it. But the pizza was terrible.
Oh,
so,
but
yes.
It doesn't robots matter. It's a robot pizza. Made it. You know what? A human can make terrible pizza, too.
That's true. Mm-hmm.
It's not exclusively not the realm of the robots.
Yeah.
Have you played with the Pixel? Neither of you have a Pixel 3.
No, first time. Like I keep saying it. I don't have phone envy.
You don't the night no? sight, the new night sight, and the camera.
Yeah, night sight looks.
I got a night sight of mine.
Yeah,
I haven't used it yet, but I got it.
I have the Huawei P20 Pro, as I think
that's actually a very good. Yeah, before. Yeah, that's a very good. I bet you that
great
you could
camera
do something like that
or cameras.
I don't know what to make of this leak. This is alleged photos of a Pixel 3 Lite. This might be for you, Jeff. Mm-hmm. The Sargo.
I'm not light. I'm just satisfied.
Again, from Russia. And this has a Snapdragon 670 and this intrigues me, a headphone jack.
What?
Yeah.
What? I don't know.
Did you see the rumors about Samsung's giant phone?
Yeah.
Like 15 cameras or something?
The S10. I don't think it's quite that many.
It's a lot. It was like 6 or something or 7. I don't know. It's like blades on razors. Now they're just like, what the hell?
It is.
Let's put 20 cameras on there.
It's 6 cameras.
Okay.
It's their top secret Galaxy S phone. It's a 5G phone with 6 cameras. The problem is, and you're going to just see weirder and weirder stuff, phone sales are just flat.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they Apple and Samsung and Google all are challenged to come up with something that makes people want to run to the market. But look at this guy, Jeff. I don't need a new phone.
I could not be more of a gadget freak and Google fanboy and all that. And it's nothing against, but the problem is I'm satisfied. I'm highly satisfied with my Pixel 2.
Yeah.
It's a good phone.
And yeah. I think if you look at Apple's results.
Same problem.
I think you're seeing, yeah.
Just same problem.
People think their phones are fine.
Yeah.
You know what you need? You need to give away motorized shoes.
Okay.
That's in the rundown.
Motorized shoes.
Google applied for a patent.
It's called virtual reality footwear.
For VR, because it'll allow you to walk in place and believe you're walking through the woods, even though you're not running into furniture.
But don't they just use treadmills or fancy treadmills?
In the movies, they actually made it because we...
the guy needs to go on a diet.
He looks exactly like somebody plays a lot of VR looks.
Yeah.
it's funny that the guy in the this is for a patent application.
Yeah.
Is a little portly.
A little portly. But yeah, so the idea here, I know I would fall and break my ass in these things in a second.
Are they roller skates or just shoes that
that are motorized so you walk in place, but the motor is there, I guess, so that you because you could run. Think about versus a treadmill, Matthew. You can go this way and that way, and turn around and then walk this way, and so on.
They have omnidirectional treadmills, though.
Really?
Yeah, they do. Mm-hmm. In fact, we sent Jason Howell down to try one out. It's the same kind of omnidirectional treadmill that's used in
Can walk in any direction. Yeah,
but it's a big honking thing, and it's
is
something. By the way, you don't see in the movie. It's noisy as hell, especially as you start moving.
Is it?
Oh yeah. It's So you'd have to have, I don't know, your plugs
but
in.
They can fix that.
They can fix anything. So, this is just, we should point out, just a patent.
A patent. We don't normally do the patents.
Patent everything, just in case. It's
just
more of
case.
A defensive move than anything else. That's an interesting idea.
Yeah.
We've been waiting for our Pixel slate.
Mm-hmm.
Google says they're starting to come. Oh, no, that was a mistake.
They're not coming?
I don't know, because this is puzzling, because I asked Jason Howell, who ordered one yesterday. He said, yeah, they say mine's coming today or tomorrow. But now, according to Android Police, it turns out those notices were a mistake. Oh, man.
Candy from the mouth of geeks.
Oh.
Damn it.
Oh. This week, some pre-order customers incorrectly received a note with delivery timing for their Pixel slate. Corrections will be sent in the following days. Oh, man. Boy, that's worse than the other thing Apple does, which is when you order like a new Apple device, you get the accessories, you know, weeks earlier, and you get all excited, and it's just the case. This is even worse. It's on its way. So I don't know what's happening with the slate. We'll have to get Kevin Toefel on when they actually come out. And I didn't realize this, and apparently no one else did, because the Ad Age story reads, YouTube is now showing Hollywood support, ad-supported Hollywood movies, and they started doing it in October, but nobody noticed until November.
Nobody noticed.
So you could get Terminator or Legally Blonde for free with ads inside, just like network television.
It's pretty smart, actually.
Yeah, I wonder how bad the ads are.
I bet lots of people will do that.
Yeah. Has anybody watched any movies on Google, on YouTube?
No, with, never.
With ads? Anybody in the chat room? I wonder, I mean, does this, because they chop
up
movies on TV. Once VCRs became available, widely available, and now DVRs and on-demand and streaming, it was like, why would you ever watch a movie with commercials in it? It's just horrible.
So now, so that created the pop-up ad that covers part of the lower bit of the screen, or the bugs that sit there while the show is on.
Yeah, don't you hate that? Okay, so here's Legally Blonde free.
Classic movie. Let's recognize.
Not a bad choice. Classic I'm going to log out though, because if I don't sign out, I'm already YouTube red. I wouldn't get any ads anyway. So I'm going to sign out. Okay.
Are you going to get a copyright pulled takedown because of this?
Yeah, probably. See the chilling effect? He says, I'm not showing it. You better show it, buddy. Here's Legally Blonde with commercials. We're showing the commercials. Oh, look.
Didn't you get a takedown notice once because of a commercial?
Oh, we've gotten takedown notices. But usually,
because
the thing that's different about stuff that's downloadable on YouTube is that you can turn it around right away. The thing that you know, YouTube Live is really sticklers. If you only get one strike, not three, mm-hmm. and they take it down for weeks. So I don't see any ads in here. Maybe they don't have ads. Maybe they're going to have ads. Huh.
Because if you go to Hulu or something, you can't get past a certain point in the scrub.
Right. So this is
free. You have to watch the commercial.
These are all free with ads on YouTube. Rocky IV, Zookeeper. They're not the best movies. I think Legally Blonde is Agent Cody Banks.
Agent Cody Banks. Are you saying that's not one of the best movies?
One and two. Rocky II, Rocky III. Rocky. That's a good movie. The Terminator, the original.
Classic.
This is sad.
What?
All dogs.
These are the movies that you could get for 99 cents in the videos in Blockbuster.
Yeah, that's right. They'd be in a bin.
Yeah, so this is basically like the bin at the gas station with all the VHS movies. Those are some quality movies.
Steve Martin's
Son of the Pink Panther.
Steve Martin's going to be a little sad. He's kind of got probably more titles in here than anybody
else. It's like an author scene. There are things in the remainder bin.
Okay. Some of these are more recent. So, Wu Dang. Oh, that's good.
Zero Dreams of Sushi.
Is that in here?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a great movie.
Yeah, it's a good movie.
Highly recommend it. There's quite a few. Oh, Muay Thai Giant. Muay Thai Giant. Hello? 7-foot gentle giant Barney Emerald is drugged and robbed while on holiday in Pattaya. He befriends two Thai sisters, one who can speak English, another who is a Muay Thai kickboxing champion. He stays with them until he can recover his passport after eating some spicy sum tum.
Yeah, classic movie. I've seen that multiple times.
That's the snippet.
It's a good kids movie.
No, it's apparently not. I have to sign in to confirm my age. The comments are funny. You can comment even on YouTube paid movies, apparently, or unpaid. So I have a little something I'm going to show you that just came.
All right.
Ooh.
We've got the privacy clip on it, but I'm going to take it off. And we'll talk about that in a second. You're watching This Week in Google, our pre-Thanksgiving Day festivities with Jeff Jarvis from CUNY and BuzzMachine.com, Matthew Ingram from the Columbia Journalism Review. And, hey, what's going on with that city in Toronto?
We'll be talking about that soon.
Yeah, the sidewalk, sidewalks.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk about that too. The dystopia in Toronto, the smart city of surveillance. But this is according to The Intercept. But first, a word from our sponsor. If you have a business, you probably have corporate cards. And you may have the corporate card from the bank and so forth. Those have been nothing but problems for us. That's why we've moved to Brex, the first corporate credit card for startups. Very easy, 5-minute online application. The underwriting is based on your cash in your bank account. So that means Brex can offer your company 10 to 20 times higher limits than other corporate credit cards. And there's no personal liability. Plus, great high-value rewards tailored to modern businesses. So you get 7 times the reward on rideshare, 3 times the points on restaurant and travel, double points on software. There's no limit on how many points you can earn. And points can be redeemed for statement credit on transactions. So that's good as cash. Exclusive offers with some of the best technology brands and services, Amazon Web Services, Google, Salesforce, WeWork. See, Brex is underwriting the company, not you. So there's no minimum operating history or painful paper application, no personal liability. They merely use the cash raised by your business to extend credit. That means no credit score, no social security number, not even a security deposit. It's a Visa card, so you can use it anywhere. And cards are instantly issued to employees. They get a virtual card where you can set limits and control spend, and then physical credit cards sent in the mail. I got mine the next day. Every employee can have a corporate card with real-time limits that can be adjusted by the boss, the administrator. That's really nice. And one of the things I really like for as the user of the card, so we used it at a restaurant the other night, and I got a text immediately from Brex saying, hey, we saw you just charged a meal. Take a picture of the receipt. What? Okay. And reply to this message. So I did. I took a picture of the receipt and replied to the message. While I'm sitting there, I mean, we hadn't even left yet. It's matched. It says, is this transaction? Yes. And you're done. You don't have to save receipts. Just throw it out now because it's in the statement. You know in the statement exactly what you spent money on. It works with major accounting software programs, so it's very easy to get data from Brex into them. Look, you got to join the thousands of startups and tech companies who are using Brex, B-R-E-X, right now to manage their growing business needs and earn valuable rewards while they do so. Get the card free, and because you're listening to this show as a TWIT listener, no fees ever, forever. Card fees are waived in perpetuity, but to take advantage of that, you've got to go to Brex, BREX.com/TWIT. BREX.com/TWIT. We know you need a corporate credit card. Why not use one that works better? BREX.com/TWIT. And we thank them for their support. And it's nice. I would show you, but I don't want you to. It's a nice black card. It's nice. I like using it. The smart city of surveillance. I don't know. This is The Intercept. Sometimes I have to bite my tongue. Mm-hmm. It's Quayside in Toronto, which is a mm-hmm. big kind of... are you familiar with it, Matthew?
Yeah.
It's a big warehouse district, right? Right now.
That's being complimentary. It's really a lot of... It's really a lot of nothing.
Okay.
So it's what used to be the old sort of port or part
waterfront.
Yeah. When there was a big sugar terminal there, now there's condos, but there's still a lot of land that is just nothing. Empty buildings, parking lots, you know, weed infested.
Yeah,
things.
It doesn't look great. So it's a joint effort from the Canadian government agency Waterfront Toronto and Google's Sidewalk Labs. They want to take 12 acres, The Intercept says, of the valuable waterfront just southeast of downtown Toronto. I guess it's not that valuable.
Not as valuable as it used to be.
And they're pitching Quayside as a solution to everything from traffic congestion and rising housing prices. Again, I'm reading The Intercept, to environmental pollution. The proposal for Quayside, I'm saying it right, Quayside, right?
Quayside, yeah.
It's spelled Quayside, but as I learned quickly...
Yeah, it's key like the British key.
The natives call it Quayside. Yeah. It includes a centralized identity management system through which, quote, each resident accesses public services, end quote, such as library cards and healthcare.
Yeah, super helpful.
Yeah.
Yep.
The driverless cars, mixed-use spaces that change according to market demand, heated streets. In Toronto, you need heated streets.
Yeah, I'm in favor of that.
Sensor-enabled waste separation. That's of garbage, not of people.
Well, it depends.
You're a wasteoid. Go there.
The algorithm determines who survives and who doesn't.
The idea is it's a laboratory, right, for some of these concepts. And people don't,
right.
They volunteer to live there, right?
Yeah.
Theoretically. I mean.
You will go live there. Yeah.
What do you mean?
I don't think it's being required.
Nobody's, yeah.
But the big issue is sort of how much control Google per se will have over, say, personal data. And intellectual property that comes out of it. It's supposed to be a partnership. And I think, so there's this sort of creepy Google aspect and the centralized information databases aspect, but there's also a sort of functional question about how much the city is sort of turning over
right.
to Google to say, do whatever you want, build whatever you want. We don't care. Take the data and do whatever you want. The issue is how much control there is on what Google does and doesn't do.
This is kind of in a microcosm what's going on in general, which is that the tech bros think they've got a solution for every problem. And if government would just get it, Larry Page practically said it at Google I.O., just give us an island. Let us just, you know, get out of the way and let us solve the world's problems. There is a libertarian streak in Silicon Valley. That government just slows things down, doesn't help. The less government, the better. And that corporations, you know, it's kind of Adam Smith's, you know, hand of the market.
This isn't anti-government, though. This is pro-service.
I think it is a little anti-government. So I agree that the sort of perspective is government is slow. Government doesn't have enough information to make the right decisions. We have lots of information.
Government always is talking about this privacy stuff.
So if you give us all your information, we'll be able to make better decisions about when to get your garbage, how to separate it, how to offer you services. I mean, there's obviously huge benefits. Like it would be.
I would buy an apartment there in a flash.
I mean, again, I would.
A Chromebook.
And I have a Huawei P20 Pro, so I know
you're giving
that all
China
my data,
that information.
All my data is backed up in Beijing, and that's fine with me.
So this is where the controversy gets a little hotter. Anna Kavoukian, who is Ontario's former privacy commissioner, was on the project, and she resigned. She was brought on, according to The Intercept, by Sidewalk Toronto as a consultant to help institute a proactive privacy by design framework. She was initially told that all data collected from residents would be deleted and rendered unidentifiable, but she resigned when she learned that third parties would be able to access identifiable information gathered at Quayside. Quote, I imagined us creating a smart city of privacy as opposed to a smart city of surveillance. And she resigned. Google Sidewalk Labs says, well, no, we are committed to the principles of privacy by design. However, the question of whether other companies involved in the Quayside project would be required to be private as well is unlikely to be worked out soon and may be out of our hands.
I mean, let's be reasonable. There's no way Google would do any of this stuff if they had to delete all the data immediately and not use it in any way. Like, that just doesn't make any sense. That's the whole point.
It wouldn't enable the services.
Right.
Well, some of the value to Google, there's the philanthropic value of creating a better city using technology. But there's also, for instance, imagine that they would, Waymo would put cars there and it would be a great test bed to see what urban environments
so
would mean. By the way, wouldn't you want to live here? I want to live here. This looks beautiful.
But I don't think they could do the things they're talking about without a certain amount of personal data.
They need is permission. It's not about the data. Right. It's about the transparency and permission.
Uber has our personal information. My gas company has personal information.
My phone has more than anything.
Yeah.
But so the big issue, as with all of those things, is how much and when and under what circumstances and what are they allowed to do with it and who are they allowed to give it to and how much transparency do you have over what they do with it?
But what if you're like me and Jeff and you don't really give a damn? But in return for giving up our privacy, we feel like we get something of real value. We get to live in this beautiful place, in this utopia where the kids can run in the street because cars don't hit them, and I can bicycle, and there's no distinction, it looks like, here between sidewalk
and
street.
You can fry an egg on the sidewalk in December because it's heated.
It's a heated street, so there's no snow removal. I would live there even if somebody knew all about my toilet habits. Who cares?
And I think
that's a fair trade.
Is there a company you would not trust to run that? Would you live in Uberville?
You know, Facebook. Who I wouldn't trust is the government.
Oh, libertarian. Yes, you Californians. Yes,
I wouldn't trust the government with it because they can do bad things to me. They have guns
in
prisons.
To be fair, they have all your information as well.
And they already have it. And that's the real concern.
They do bad things with it and give it to people and sell it.
That's the real concern is that Google will gather it all and then the government will come and get it.
That is one risk for sure. I mean, to me, it's everybody, I think, well, with a few exceptions, and they live in cabins in the woods somewhere. With a few exceptions, I think everybody would be willing to make a trade that involves them giving up some personal information. People do already for Gmail or Facebook or lots of free services. But the question is kind of where on the continuum of we own all your information or get access to all your information is this going to be?
I'm just saying I should be allowed to make that choice. Of course, if somebody doesn't want to do that, they shouldn't live in Hooverville. But everybody else... What was it I was talking about in the weekend about Celebration, the Disney built city in Florida?
Right.
If you don't want it, don't live there. Disney, I do not want to have my information.
There's your limit. Yeah.
I draw the line at Disney. But this seems like a fair trade to me, and I would like the choice to do it, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah. And I think you should have. And my only fear would be that if, and I think what some of the critics of this project are saying is if controls aren't put in place before it's built, it'll just be a kind of slippery slope down into, the worst possible scenario.
Right.
And then you will have made
Google
a decision.
Should be doing, sorry, Matthew.
No, go ahead.
What Google Sidewalk should be doing is proposing very publicly sets of rules for this so that there can be open discussion. And It's kind of like I'm going to go two sides on this. It's kind of like a condo board or co-op board, I should say. But I will also say this. The worst example of democracy I have ever experienced is a co-op board.
Yeah.
No right? Kidding. They're terrible.
That's the worst.
Yeah.
Because there's always some petty tyrant who just wants some power.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was going to say,
high school yearbook the committee was bad too.
Yeah, same thing. There's nothing. The smaller the issue, the bigger the fight.
And you could argue, I think, if you were defending Google, which I'm not, but I could be, is that governments do make lots of really dumb and expensive and, in fact, dangerous decisions because they don't have enough information. And so, theoretically at least, more information could produce better decisions.
Well, here's a company I don't fully trust. Facebook, 39 minutes ago, let's see, 5 p.m. day before Thanksgiving, admitted that they not only did they hire the defenders. Here's the tweet from John Passitano.
Definers.
Did I say defenders? Well, they were defending Facebook.
Same thing.
Did we ask them to work on George Soros? Elliot Schrag writes.
Oh,
yes.
Jesus.
Yes. So Elliot Schrag is, by the way, the fall guy for this. He is the outgoing head of Google PR.
Right. He's already left, in fact.
He's already left. I have Facebook. I'm sorry, not Google. So it's clear that Sheryl Sandberg and Mark Zuckerberg have said, great, Elliot's leaving anyway. Elliot.
Throw him under the bus.
You did it, right? Did we? Elliot's writing. This came out at 5 p.m.
Did
we ask? They did it. Did we ask them to work on George Soros? Yes. In January 2018, investor and philanthropist George Soros attacked Facebook, by the way, nothing I haven't done, in a speech at Davos calling us a menace to society.
We had what's most upsetting about this? These are Jewish executives.
I know.
Should have known better.
Right.
Should have known the symbolism of going after George Soros.
Because he's Jewish and it's an
anti-Semitic meme.
It's an anti-Semitic meme. We had not heard such criticism from him before and wanted to determine if he had any financial motivation. Well, he's
then
Jewish.
You ask. You research.
Definers researched this using public information. Later, when the Freedom from Facebook campaign emerged as a so-called grassroots coalition, the team asked Definers to help us understand the group behind him. They learned that George Soros was funding several of the coalition members. They prepared documents and distributed those to the press to show this was not simply a spontaneous grassroots movement, but part of the world Jewish conspiracy. No, I added that part. So is this what
others funding Freedom from Facebook include the CWA Union, Jewish Voice for Peace, Move On, Public Citizen.
So the worst people.
Yeah, horrible, horrible liberals. It's liberals. So now what do you say, Jeff?
Oh, I've been very upset about this. And let's do my disclosure here. I raised money from Facebook for the school. I'm independent of Facebook. I received no money personally from Facebook or any of the platforms. End of disclosure. They make it I try to defend the internet, and thus I defend the agents who are building what I think are very good and important things that enable good things on the internet. I end up trying to defend Facebook, but boy, they make it hard. An example like this. Think for two effing seconds. You don't go attacking George Soros. If you want to ask publicly, if you want to criticize him publicly, if you want to disagree with him publicly, fine. But you don't do it sub rosa.
Well, and particularly, you don't do it using a group Definers that is known for doing this kind of hit piece.
The worst and stupidest thing Facebook has done, and this goes back to the episode of Trending and the employed people there who were accused of anti-conservative bias, right? They go overboard. So whenever you have a Facebook event, whenever Zuckerberg has invited people to headquarters, they go overboard trying to invite an equal number or greater number of conservatives. And the problem is, as we've talked on the show often, as I say all the time, there's one media outlet in this country that's conservative, and that's Fox News, and the rest is liberal. We liberals don't admit that, but that's another discussion. So what happens is you can't just invite Fox News, so you invite the next one, the next one, the next one. Before long, you have Breitbart in the room. Before long, you've hired Definers. Before long, you've not used your own standards to say, I don't care if they're conservative or liberal. Do I want to be associated with those people? So the paradox here is that by trying to be more balanced, they're making the exact same mistake we make in journalism of false balance. And they're putting themselves in the company of bad people.
I think they also, to me, this is a sign of just how desperate things have become at Facebook, because I think they've clearly said to someone, to Elliot or to whoever, we have to do whatever we can. We have to hire all the usual terrible lobbying firms. We have to hire all the usual, you know, bad actors to do this stuff, because I think they feel that they're behind the eight ball in Washington,
so,
which they are.
A couple of things to note about this. One, that it was released at 5 p.m. the day before Thanksgiving, which is a news hole. And they knew that. So,
oh, yeah.
They buried it.
Actually, Elliot's fact that he was taking the fall came out earlier.
Yes, but this.
Oh, yeah, but this
piece
post
came out 45 minutes ago. Point two, I find it almost impossible to believe that Sheryl Sandberg did not know that this was going on. I know Elliot Schrage is going to take the fall for it, but are you telling me the chief operating officer had no idea?
So here's the question to me. Here's the parlor game to me, is who takes the next fall? Because Facebook famously has fired nobody for anything, right? So Elliot took the fall, and
He
was on the way out, so this was easy, but he took the fall for this. But the question is, does Sheryl Sandberg stay COO? Does Mark Zuckerberg stay chairman?
Margaret Sullivan,
I don't think he's going to leave the company. Margaret Sullivan wrote a column yesterday, which I haven't even read yet, but I saw her last night in the Washington Post, where she said that Zuckerberg should step down as chairman so that there is true oversight. I don't know that that's our business to say or not.
And Mark Zuckerberg's told CNN today, I am not stepping down as Facebook chair.
Right.
This is a lot of the criticism around the biggest issues has been fair, but I do think if we're going to be real, there's this bigger picture at well, Zuckerberg said, which is that we, I don't know what this means, but you'll have to explain it to me, which is that we have a different worldview than some of the folks who are covering us.
I noticed that too, and it's a very strange statement, but I think what he means is we think connecting the world and giving everyone the ability to say things and share things is good, and the people who cover us do not.
Yeah, here's another way to put it. Matthew, I think you're right. And I think that when Zuckerberg, the problem is they feel constrained to say what they really think, which is the odd thing. When Zuckerberg said after the election, when he mocked the idea that Facebook itself changed the results of the election, and he had data to back that up in terms of knowing how many people actually saw things. I think that he was probably right in saying that. However, in a PR sense, it was stupid as hell because it came off as a form of arrogance and nonchalance. And so if he said what he really thought, if his worldview is I have data and no, I think you all are overreacting. I think it's a small number of people doing some bad stuff. And we were slow, but we did it, right? But if he said that, he'd get smashed. So instead, he says things like that in that statement, which nobody knows what the heck it means. They've got to get to a point of honesty and bluntness and transparency, and we're going to disagree with them sometimes at that. But then give us data. Show us the data that you have that backs up what the impact really is. But it's all disturbing because what bothers me is it hurts the internet.
He talked about Sheryl Sandberg. He said, Sheryl's a really important part of this company, is leading a lot of the efforts for a lot of the biggest issues we have. She's been an important partner to me for 10 years. I'm really proud of the work we've done together. I hope that we work together for decades more to come.
That sounds like I'm behind you 1,000%.
1,000%. Somebody in the chat room, and I'm trying to find the bit of the clip where he says this, says that he blames Jeff Bezos and the Washington Post. Maybe that's a confusion with somebody else. But I don't know what to say at this point. Anyway, they tried to flush it down the news hole, and at least here, this is, you know, we're talking about it.
Did we work on this?
And I think if you you guys both read the big New York Times feature, right?
That's what this is all, of course, what stimulated this is last week.
Yeah.
And I decided last week not to spend a lot of time on it. Jeff and I and Stacey talked about it before the show, but it had just come out, and so I decided not to spend a lot of time on the show talking about it. But we could talk about it now. 1 week later, the Times had, they say, 50 inside sources delay, deny, and deflect how Facebook's leaders fought through crisis. And that's where the George Soros relevant revelations
first appeared. To me, in that story, the shocking bad thing in that story was the Soros angle. The rest of it wasn't so much an expose to me as a TikTok, as we say in the field. It was stuff we pretty much already knew, but took us through the details and fleshed it out. But I don't think there was anything in that story that we, besides the Soros thing, that was terribly illuminating. Or even so much an expose as it was, it put it all in one place, and you say, "Oh boy!"
And there was a lot of yelling and stuff.
So I saw,
by the way, this has cost Mark personally, and has cost Facebook's stock down 40% since July. Zuckerberg lost $17.4 billion in wealth this year. So it's not there is a consequence to this. I Mark is so wealthy, so virtually infinitely wealthy that's meaningless. It's paper money, but still.
Here's the voice that I trust in this discussion, which is Alex Stamos.
Yeah.
And I saw him at an event last Wednesday. It was Chatham House Rule. We're off the record, so maybe I'm not even supposed to say I saw him. But
Alex Stamos, the former chief security officer at Facebook, who left.
who left in this, but the New York Times, you know, he's been pushing back. He's been critical of Facebook. He's been saying what Facebook and he missed or did wrong, but he's also pushing back on this coverage in a very intelligent and savvy way. And all I can say is this: I was very impressed with Alex. I was very impressed with his candor, and he is pushing back on some of this coverage.
Here's the opinion piece he wrote in the Washington Post. Yes, Facebook made mistakes in 2016, but we weren't the only ones. Yes, he said, Sheryl Sandberg yelled at me. he had gone to public, well, at least gone to the board and said he had no confidence that we'd found everything the Russians were up to at Facebook.
He didn't go public.
No, well, public to the board, let's put it that way. Yeah. And it was quite possible things could get worse before they got better. Sandberg, as the Times investigation reported, felt blindsided by this and yelled at him. So he confirmed that detail.
So the narrative around his departure, which was the narrative based in large part on New York Times reporting, was that Stamos, when Facebook came out with its own internal security report during the 2016, the run-up to the election, that Sandberg and others put pressure on him not to say that it was the Russians. And in fact, the word Russian doesn't appear anywhere in the report. There's a kind of veiled reference to the fact that Facebook has no reason to believe that U.S. intelligence isn't correct in their view, which of course was that the Russians were involved, but it doesn't specifically say. So he's pushed back in particular on that narrative that he had a fight with Sheryl, who wanted him to downplay the Russian aspect. And presumably he's free to speak now that he's left. He said, it's not that cut and dried. There were decisions made at the time about what they could reliably say, how far should they go. Obviously, hindsight being 2020, they probably should have said Russians were involved, but you know, it was a fluid situation.
I think there's so many issues that happened. Russian media manipulation is one of them. But here's his final paragraph. Finally, U.S. citizens must adjust to a media environment in which several dozen gatekeepers no longer control what's newsworthy. We've talked about this a lot. While the platforms that bring hundreds of new media outlets to your phone need to improve protections against abuse, in a free society, we'll always be vulnerable to the injection of narratives from the enemies of democracy, both foreign and domestic. The last line of defense will always be citizens who are willing to question what they see and hear, even when it means questioning our own beliefs.
This is so, so important, because it is the reality we have, is that we have now an abundance of speech. There are not gatekeepers. This all in all, I think, is a good thing. And what it means is responsibility now falls to everyone for what to decide that they want to believe or not, and have some basis to do that. And we have to feed that. We in media, we, the former gatekeepers, have to feed that in new ways. But at the end of the day, everyone can speak. And that's just where we are. And by the way, Alex also says frequently that the other problem, and I have heard this from all of the platforms vehemently, and this goes not just the Trump administration, this goes very much to the Obama administration, is that government did not share information. Government was not the least bit helpful pre the 2016 election. Whatever they knew, they weren't sharing, and they weren't giving any tips to the platforms. The platforms often didn't know to look for Russians early enough. Government probably did, but government was shy about this. So there is fault across many lines here.
Let me ask both of you guys something. Do you really think that we know what the Russians did? They, you know, created a bunch of sock puppets, made ads, they targeted different opinions, they tried to create strife. But honestly, do you really think that effort was a decisive factor in the 2016 election?
Do you want to go first, Jeff?
I don't, but I'm curious what you guys
think. I think it was so close that it's hard to say that it didn't. For 70,000 votes, could 70,000 people have somehow indirectly been influenced by this?
Well, if it was that close,
right? But that means
49.9%.
I'm going to agree with you. It was not Right.
It shouldn't have been close. For that,
it wouldn't have done. And I will say again, and I'll get tweets for this, and hey, Twit people, it's my fault, not Leo's. It's Fox News that did this. Fox News created the country we're in right now. And we in media created it by not serving half of America. We created that void and vacuum in liberal media. Fox News filled it.
I think you could blame CNN, too, just as much.
Yes, I think so. Because
every single Trump rally.
Yes.
He got immense free airtime.
I've talked to a number of people who specialize in this research in particular and asked them that question. Do they think that Facebook and particularly Russian trolls swung the election in any sense of that term? And I would say most of the ones I've spoken to don't believe that it did. And the main reason is because research shows that content that you see online, whether it's ads or just regular content, doesn't convince you to do anything. So if you try and measure people's, I mean, look at the number of people who click on ads. It's a fraction of 1%. That online content reinforces things that you already believe, and it pushes you in directions you are already going, but it doesn't change minds in that sense. And so did it maybe give a boost to someone? A little bit, perhaps. Did it kind of encourage people to think things even more strongly that they already thought? Yes. And the big debate in this research is it was a very, very close election. Mm-hmm. And so you don't have to show a huge amount of impact to sort of tip things over. And that's why I think there's still disagreement about sort of who's to blame.
I mean, given that it's close, which had more influence, Russians throwing out some junk or Comey?
But the point is, if it's close, then half the nation feels that way. So the fact is, it was close.
So the other thing that
so it was maybe influenceable, but it wasn't influenceable because you took the vast majority of people and changed their minds.
But the
most
other thing
people
that
had already made up their minds by far.
I think the other thing that may have played a role, which is incredibly, in fact, almost impossible to measure, is who didn't vote. And did some of this information cause people not to vote? You can measure people who voted. You can ask them why they voted the way they did. You can look at how they voted before. It's very difficult to measure the impact on people who didn't vote.
Here's what gets me about the PR thing here, and Lord knows I'm no PR man, and I'm not exactly politic in any way. And you might hoot at this, but handled properly, I believe that Facebook could have presented itself as a victim.
Yes,
and
that's right.
It's not unlike Tylenol. Right, where it depends on your response. It depends on how open you are. It depends on how much you really are the victim and how you're not a willing agent or an unwilling agent of bad things going on. It depends on how diligent you are. It depends on a lot of things. It's not just a PR slant.
But that would not fly at all. There's no way Facebook was a victim.
Well, but see, that's where I'm not trying to justify Facebook here. I'm trying to give a scenario that said if this had happened 5 years ago,
that's a reasonable spin, I think.
I think there's a reasonable view.
I disagree.
I think they were, but Matthew, I think that, again, I'm not trying to justify them, and I'm being careful to say this. I don't want people going on Twitter, hey, Jarvis says Facebook is a victim. To some extent, they are, though, Matthew. They are. Is that they were targeted, and they didn't.
But look.
There's things they didn't do, but they were targeted.
But this company has hundreds of billions of dollars, has tens of thousands of smart people. It's business is to run that network. And according to that New York Times story, until midway through 2016, there was no one at Facebook whose business it was to think about misinformation and how the platform might be used to spread misinformation.
Right,
no one, no, not
you're
a
right.
single
you're right.
person. This company is over a decade old. We know, you and I know, since we're old people, we've been online for a long time. We've watched IRC, we've watched web forums, we've seen the rise of 4chan. We know that when you connect people online and there's that sort of disinhibition effect of being online, bad things can happen. Facebook should have known and should have done something.
I don't think they could have seen Russian interference the way it happened.
I think they could.
I think.
And I think they should.
I disagree. I disagree. And let's remember, our government didn't see it either and didn't act on it as well. So where I agree with you is people acting badly. Yes. And they all, Google and Facebook both managed to deal with that when it came to financial motivation and spam. Right. It's a different issue to deal with psychological motivation, political motivation. It's harder for a whole bunch of reasons, but they didn't pay attention to resources to that. So you and I agree there. I think it's so unprecedented.
Like what the Russians troll did has been a function of international politics for 50 years. I mean, this is not something that was invented
by
the internet.
Yes, but not in the U.S.
I think it has been in the U.S. In some cases, created by the U.S. This is a known phenomenon.
That too, yes.
What I'm saying is, if you've created a giant platform that you're making tens of hundreds of billions of dollars from, and you're connecting billions of people around the world, it's incumbent on you to think about. And one of the things I criticize both Google and Facebook for is not thinking about just thinking about all the good ways in which your technology can help people. If you're going to build something that large, it's incumbent on you to think about how it could be used against people or in bad ways. And it's incumbent on you to try and stop that, not to continually apologize after it happens.
Matthew, we're not disagreeing as much as I think you're trying to say here. All I'm trying to say is, because I agree, they should have done more. Maybe they couldn't have seen everything you think they could have seen, but that's a matter of degree. They should have seen this as a responsibility. They should have invested more resources. We're agreeing about all of that. What I'm trying to say is that if they had done that, if they had devoted resources, if they had been transparent, if they had been collaborative, if they had done all of that, and then the Russians hit, they could have said, we too were a victim here.
They could have.
Because they didn't do all those things. No, right. You're absolutely right. It wouldn't fly. But they could have. That's all we're saying. That's all I'm saying.
If they had been a completely different company. Yeah.
And I think the United States was sitting ducks anyway. Because of our division, it was easy to drive a wedge.
Yeah. Well, there's a chicken egg there, too.
We've been divided for a few years now.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's play some trumpets because it's time for the Google change log.
Let's change.
The Google change the subject.
We need trumpets for that. Hey, Carson, when you get bored of anything we're talking about, just play trumpets.
Change the subject. New from Google. This one's a little complicated. Google Assistant on iOS has been updated so that you can now issue OK Google commands on your iPhone, but you have to do it by calling Siri first. And so
who's going to do that?
I don't know. Well, the only reason you might do it is if you have smart home stuff that's only compatible with your Google Home.
I guess, yeah.
So you,
I like this. You're going to say, hey, S, OK, G, yes. Yo, Amazon.
Yo. Yeah. Anyway, read up on it from The Verge's article where they just explain exactly how you do it. I'm sorry. Everybody woke up. Both my Pixel and my iPhone both woke up on that one. And Siri said, "Very funny, boss. I mean, not funny. Ha ha, but funny." My Pixel said, "Welcome to the waking world."
Ooh, okay.
So there you go. The new version of Wear OS.
Kind of a creepy message.
I know. Welcome to the waking world.
It's like a Matrix kind of message.
Hell? And then it says, "Did you sleep well?"
Well,
did I eat the blue pill? What happened here?
That's nice.
Wear OS version H update improves battery saver and standby. I don't know anybody who's still wearing Watch OS, but if you are Wear OS,
I am.
Good. Now you can update and get better app switching and better battery life and a whole lot more. Version H.
I watched like months ago, and then I got stymied at putting the darn little tiny pin thing with the band. It came not connected to the band, and I haven't put it on.
That's where Apple really did a good job, because it's very easy to swap bands on the Apple Watches.
Yeah.
I've got a Moto 360, and it dies about a little after noon. So
how old is that? About 10 years old, Matthew?
That's the nice round one, though. It's nice. I like it.
Yeah, I like it. I like it.
Get you so right through the morning.
New battery. Yeah, all the way through the morning. And then,
Mickey Mouse's 90th anniversary is coming up. You know what that means? Time for a new copyright law. But besides
that.
Oh, yeah.
Time to update the copyright law. But besides that, you could celebrate with your Google Home. There is a exhibition in New York. I didn't know this. Mickey, the True Original Exhibition. And it's at the 60th Avenue. I don't know what's there. Something. It's $38, though. But that's New York money, that's like $1.50. You can get a bowl of something for that. That is all driven by Google Home Mini, a special interactive experience. This is the last room in the exhibit, so hold on to your hats. The Google Mini also has a Mickey's Game Show. Just say, "Hey Goog, play Mickey's Game Show." You'll team up with Daisy, Donald, Goofy, or Minnie to answer Mickey trivia questions. You think how much did Disney pay Google for this? OtterBox, I think this is kind of fun. OtterBox has created a custom base accessory to make your Google Home Mini look like Mickey Mouse.
Wow.
With his ears. And you can say, Google, play Mickey Mouse Adventure right to the ears. Talk right to the ears. Happy birthday, Mickey. Google's Find My Device. The next generation will now be able to look around for your device inside some buildings. This is what's new. Support for indoor maps to help you find your device in airports, malls, or other large buildings. In other words, your house is right out, but any public building that's been mapped.
It also means Google knows where you've been.
Google knows where you are. That'll get pushed out. It's not, I don't think it's out yet, but it's going to get pushed out. And there is a very special page. Mapping Thanksgiving, brought to you by Google Maps and Google News Lab. Search trends. The number one search trend, I'm so depressed, today was outlet mall.
Mall. Mm-hmm. You cheap bastards. Mm-hmm. Buy retail.
Yeah. These are the most uniquely popular stops during the Thanksgiving holiday. On Thanksgiving, Tree Farm takes over from outlet mall. Friday, Scenic Overlook.
Hmm.
Followed by Place of
Suicide.
Worship.
Yeah.
Overall, Outlet Mall, number one. Tree Farm, number two. Scenic Overlook, number three. Electronics Store, number four. Video Game Store, number five. By state, the most uniquely popular searches during Thanksgiving by state. For some reason, in California, it's City Courthouse. In New York, it's Music Venue. We don't have Canada on here, but I bet you it's something like Maine's historical landmark.
Who types in music venue? Oh, I see. They're asking for specific music
venue. A music venue, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I see. Okay, it's just they're okay. They're all add up into music venue.
Why is everybody looking for the courthouse in California? In Oregon, it's feed store. In Washington State, it's bus company.
This makes no
sense. Boat rental.
These are most uniquely popular, so it's the... Yeah, I don't know what that you can
car stereo store.
Wait a minute.
Who has a car
Who's
stereo
Who's looking
anymore?
For car stereo stores? Oh, the fine folks in what is that? What state is that? Arizona? What is going on in Arizona?
I can't find any place to fix my 8-track.
I need a car stereo store. Petaluma used to have one, but it's long gone.
Yeah, maybe
that's why they're searching for it.
Does it exist anymore?
Car stereo store.
Can you put in an Android
Auto? Can you put some
Google
into put some Google into my radio.
State government's a big search in Indiana. Car racetrack, big search in.
Okay,
I don't believe any of this.
I wish I knew my states better. What state is this pink one? They're looking for sandwich shops.
Tennessee and Ohio. The sandwich
West Virginia.
Shop is West Virginia.
West Virginia sandwich shops.
Well, that's fair.
Yeah.
I would go along with that.
An American restaurant, a popular search wherever that is.
Arkansas.
But state government, man, they must be having some
issues. Why are you searching for the state government there, huh? But you learned, is that something that you learned at Harvard? You know your states there, Carson. You learned that at Harvard?
You're embarrassing us, Leo.
He's a Harvard boy.
I do not know my states. Edges.
Well, you're Canadian. You're not expected to know anything inside the
We're tested on it.
Were you?
Oh, yeah.
What? You're kidding.
Yeah. No.
Obviously, I never was.
You guys don't get tested on Canadian provinces, I think.
Yeah, we don't know Saskatchewan, no.
It's easy, though. Canada's like stripes.
Yeah.
It's very simple.
Well, except Ontario, which is very wide.
This is confusing. This is like all these little plots of land.
I tried to explain to a guy in Amsterdam once that after driving 17 hours in a car, I was only halfway across the province of Ontario.
Huge.
Number one search in Nevada for Thanksgiving, parking garage.
Well,
next to that's casino. Important.
That's important.
In New York City today, they're searching for art centers.
Pizza.
Art centers, then cake shops, storage facilities. Very popular.
We're going to be searching for heat tomorrow. It's going to be 9 degrees.
Cold. Do you think I will get snow next in 2 weeks when we come to the Big Apple?
I don't know.
I would like that. Right.
I hope not, because I was trying to get out of New York last Thursday to go to Stockholm. Man. 10 hours in the airport. It was torture. I got out. Most of the flights were leaving and coming back.
Brutal. Yeah.
It was brutal.
I'm going to be facing
brutal.
That.
However, just quick story here. So I met all these wonderful people. I met a woman who runs a thing called Lemonade, where she was going to Africa to help people in trauma change their lives. There's a guy who runs... Oh, sorry.
No, I'm not done.
What?
Carson hit the button by accident.
No, Carson was giving me the signal. Enough
change the subject.
Service.
Change the subject.
So I met a guy. Who was going to Africa to work on food security with people. They had to fly to Rwanda and then walk across a border. His mother and sister lost their homes in paradise. He lost things in paradise, yet he's still going to Africa to help people.
Isn't that
I
amazing?
Met this incredibly talented new music cellist named Ashley Bathgate. Please, everybody, look her up. She's really
Did she
good.
She play for you? Or
No, but I looked up the video. I looked up the videos the next day, and I said I was in the presence of this awe-inspiring talent. And I just said, oh, that's nice. You play the cello. You know. So there was a silver lining to the snow crop, but oh my Lord, it was just awful. So Leo, you could be here for 2 weeks.
Okay. Yeah.
Actually, if I am, I'm coming to New Jersey to visit you.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are.
We had a little premature change log, but now you can complete the Google change log.
Bum, bum, bum.
With my
horse,
which was taking a ship from Spain to America, which is when the diary began. That was my first journey.
I didn't know there was spoken word involved. That is Ashley Bathgate playing Why Women Weep.
I don't know if I came from that time.
It's the quickest way to rejoin the ocean.
Wow.
That's kind of pretty.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a break, and then we're going to get your picks. There's a lot more stuff to talk about, but I've just run out of energy and time, and I've got
he wants his turkey.
I got a turkey. Actually, I got a ham to put in the oven. Ham takes a lot longer than turkey to cook, but it cooks more uniformly, and it's all dark meat.
No, it's the new white meat.
Well, my ham, I don't know. It's a little...
Like it's dark? The new white meat.
It's the new white meat. It's the other white meat.
Is it a jamón ibérico?
No, it is not. It is a city, what they call a city ham. It was corn cob smoked in a barn in Vermont.
Okay. Sounds great.
No, it's going to be delicious.
What time should we come over?
1 o'clock tomorrow.
All right.
Should be done. You're all invited. The ham goes in the oven at 4 a.m. tomorrow.
Oh, Jesus.
Well, this is the June oven. We'll know when to turn on everything.
So it's a slow cook. It's a slow cook.
Slow 8-hour cook. And I'm
Why couldn't the June do it?
Because it's too big. It won't fit.
Oh.
It's a 16-pound ham.
Whoa, that's an entire pig.
Yeah, does it have the apple in its mouth? Jeez.
No, it's actually like one buttock.
Wow.
It's a large, it must have been a large pig, but it's...
Commercial hogs are the size of a VW
Volvo.
Bug. So.
Yeah. I'm going to brine it in apple cider as soon as I get home.
Oh, man, I'm getting hungry.
Yeah. And then I got a lasagna. I made on Monday, I made lasagnas. I made a red one with red sauce and a green one with pesto.
Can you FedEx me some ham?
Yeah, I will have enough to FedEx. Because I was planning for 16, because I don't know why I thought there'd be 16. I think it's going to be like 5 people.
Perfect. Put some in a backpack.
A little less popular these days, are we, Leo?
FedEx.
Oh, I thought there'd be a lot more people coming. This happened last time I cooked for Thanksgiving. I overdid it a little bit. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage, home for the holidays, right? It's nice. If you're looking for a new home, you know it's a really important purchase. This is where you and your family will be enjoying the holidays, Thanksgiving and Christmas, and, you know, you'll be gathering around the hearth for family meals. It's a big deal. You're buying your home. It's also a big purchase, right? The biggest check you'll ever write. And I'm not talking about for the house, just the down payment alone. So it's kind of nervous making when you're buying a house. You got to find the right place, right? And you're going to need a loan. So can I recommend the best lender in the country, the number one lender in the country, Quicken Loans? Now, 9 years in a row since 2010, number one in customer satisfaction, according to J.D. Power for mortgage origination. The last 5 years for mortgage approval. That's a lot of number one awards there. Also number one in volume since December, beating out the big bank. It's because the customer comes first at Quicken Loans. For instance, Rocket Mortgage. This is the entirely online mortgage approval process they created for us geeks so we could do everything we need to do to get a home loan on our phone or our tablet or our desktop. Phone's perfect. You can go out to an open house, say, let's get this. Fire up rocketmortgage.com/twig. Please use that. That way we get credit. rocketmortgage.com/twig. And you'll begin the three-step power buying process. Step one, no 20-page, you know, application, no trip to the bank. You just answer a few simple questions. They'll run a credit check and give you pre-qualified approval. Boom, that's it. You get to choose the term of your loan, the rate, the down payment. And by the way, they have very good rates, very competitive rates, a variety of different loan products. You pick the one you want. Then step two, without any intervention on your part in most cases, they will verify your income, assets, and credit. And they do this in less than 24 hours to give you verified approval. Now, you've got a letter. You are basically a cash buyer. You go right to the front of the line. You got a letter you could show the seller or your realtor that says you've got verified approval. That is a great, great thing to have. That's power. Step three kicks in. Once you're verified, you qualify for their all-new exclusive Rate Shield approval. They lock the rate. Now, this is a big deal. Rates are going up. I don't know what is going on in Canada, but in the United States, rates are going on. And that means it's a little scary when you're out there buying because there's pressure. Like, we got to buy this house before the rates go up. It's going to cost us more. Not with Rate Shield approval. Quicken Loans will lock your rate for up to 90 days while you shop, up to 3 months. The rates can go up, but yours won't. Actually, if the rates drop, yours will drop, but either way, you win. It's exactly what you'd expect from America's best mortgage lender. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/twig. Rate Shield approval is only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, and MLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. rocketmortgage.com/twig. Get a nice new home for the holidays. All right. I'm going to show you my pick of the week. I'll start. Oh, no, that's impolite. Let me let you. I'll do mine last. I'll let you start, Matthew Ingram. Ingram, because you are a guest.
Thank you. Thank you. This is actually from the rundown, but we didn't get to it. I just thought it was fascinating. Airbnb is going to let you stay with Mongolian tribes people, if you want to, reindeer herders.
But they don't have a street address. How are you going to find them, Matthew?
But,
well, you would use what three words?
Which we've talked about in the show, yes. What three words you have. So here's a real use of it.
Yeah, which is fascinating, sort of the way that they use a unique combination of words for places that don't have a location. Obviously, if you're sleeping in a tent, in the forest, on the steppes or whatever, in Mongolia, you're probably not going to have a street address. I just think it's fascinating.
For your cabin, right, Matthew?
Yeah, We actually have a 911 address. We had to get one so they could find you and give you CPR or whatever. But before that, it was just, you know, third house on the left. So I thought this would be fascinating to go and live with Mongolian reindeer herders. You get to milk the reindeer. You get to, you know, sleep in a tent in the woods. Sounds fascinating.
And because they're nomadic, their three words get updated.
Yeah. They use a service in, in a major city, I guess, that updates it whenever they move.
Isn't that hysterical? So if you go to the What Three Words map, here, I'll put it in right now for the Mongolian herders. The three words are evaluate, video, nails. So let me enter. By the way, what was that? I sent away for my address. I never got that.
What do you mean sent away for? I thought you just...
They were giving you free plaques with your address on it, and I sent away.
Wow. Yeah.
You can't get there from here. There is no evaluate video nails. Maybe that was just a... That's the equivalent of 555-1234.
It may have changed.
Yeah, that's a fake one. Oh, that's cool. Three words you can... Now, but really, do you want to live in a tent with nomadic Mongolian...
Yeah.
Reindeer hoarders.
I think it'd be fascinating. Those are yurts, I assume.
It looks like a teepee.
Well,
what's the difference? What is a yurt?
Oh, yurts are much nicer than a teepee.
I know. What's the definition of a yurt?
It's a thatched.
Technically, a yurt is circular.
It's circular with a thatched roof.
That's what I was asking. Okay.
Here's a yurt. This is my yurt. That's
nice.
Now that's a yurt.
That would be nice.
That's a sort of yurt palace.
That's a yuppie yurt.
Yeah.
I will get you a more. This is
very
a big thing.
Bougie.
Yeah, this is a bougie yurt.
Out your way, it is. Yes.
Yeah, but I actually wanted
not in the normal world. It's not.
I'm not allowed because I'm in farm country to build any more on my property because I'm within 100 feet of a farm. Yeah, you can't build within 100 feet of a farm. It's some weird law. But this is a temporary building. A yurt.
Yeah, if it's movable, I bet you could build.
That's exactly right. It's like a tent, except it's not. It's a yurt.
So all you have to do is build it on stringers, and then they can pick it up and put it on a truck.
Yeah. See? Just a little wooden platform.
Nice.
Yeah. That is some yurt. What is your number of the week, JJ?
So I think I'll do the Wirecutter Black Friday page, which is constantly being updated, even as prices go up and down.
Okay.
So it's a useful little tool here to find if you're a cheap bastard, you can find bargains for your loved ones on Black Friday.
It's funny.
It's,
I mean,
it's changing and adding all the time.
These companies like Wirecutter and Thrillist and others basically treat this like, I mean, it's like an invasion. They've got the desk, and they've got people at tables, and they've got, you know, a war room, and it's crazy. But what's good about the Wirecutter is they tell you if it's actually a deal, because it turns out
they tell you whether it's any good or not, and is it really a deal?
Yeah, a huge proportion.
So the Fossil Q Android smartwatch, normally $200, is $150.
Yeah, $150, nice,
which is a good deal. It's a 3G, not a 4G, but it's a good. But that'll be past Matthew's minus 1G.
You get no G's on yours, Matthew.
So I was looking at this, and I saw bike helmets on there, and it reminded me of what I saw in Stockholm. Have you heard, this is not a number, but screw it. Have you heard of the Hövding?
Of course, everybody's heard of the Hövding.
What? The Hövding?
What is it? How do you spell Hövding?
The Hövding is an airbag
just like
bike
it sounds.
Helmet. Oh, and it's attractive.
Yeah, it inflates.
Well, it doesn't inflate normally. It only inflates if you fall. And it's got helium, and it's charged. Isn't that phenomenal?
So, but you have to wear a kind of a scarf thing.
You wear the scarfy thing, right? Yeah. So I met with a media executive, and she bicycled, because of course it's Sweden, to the hotel for breakfast, and she was wearing the Hövding.
Oh, so everybody in Sweden wears a Hövding.
They wear the Hövding.
Pretty much.
I can
There's another video. There's another video on there that shows it inflating from ground up.
Mm. I could wear.
Great idea.
I think it's a wonderful idea. I want one.
I could just wear it like that.
But is it?
I thought That's what I thought it really was. Gonna protect I would actually kind of wear that all the time.
Here is, I mean, here is Will It Pop, Hoofding 2.0.
Isn't that amazing?
Wow.
I would just like to wear that and periodically trigger it as I was walking down the street.
Yeah. Will It Pop? This is a new Hoofding game.
Oh.
Curbs with Hoofding.
Hoofding.
Is he going to just throw himself on the ground?
I guess so. Let's watch.
Oh, the fear is that you go over a curb
and you
trigger the Hoofding.
The Hoofding. No.
No, doesn't trigger
it. It's fine.
So that's, I think,
drive
false,
into a building.
False triggers of a Hoofding might be a problem.
Okay, so is he going to do this?
Oh, no. Doesn't pop. He's going over big chunks of cement now.
It's quite the retro-looking bike.
I like it. It's
they use
yellow.
Stunt people to
simulate Hoofding.
Yes.
Popping.
Okay.
I just thought I would share that. But you're right, Leo. I wish it were constantly inflated all the time. I would love to ride around New York City with an inflated Hoofding.
If you were in New York. I think that's the woman who was in the first. Isn't it? What's her name? She's great. She was also in Californication. She's a sweet. I love this. I could just watch this all day.
I know. I could.
If you were in New York, someone would try and punch you to trigger it.
Punch me in the Hoofding, will you?
It's like 300 euros. It's like 300 euros. Once it inflates, you can't fix it.
Right. So it's a one-shot Hoofding.
I got it.
Well, of course.
It has a black box on it, so they ask you to send in the black box if it inflates, so they know how well it did. Yes. The Hoofding, invented by, I think she said, two young Swedish women who had this idea for the Hoofding.
Wow. I kind of want one.
I have a
Bluetooth enabled helmet with lights. It lights up and it'll answer my phone. I can listen to books. It blinks. What? It's got all sorts of stuff. Because I got for myself and Lisa for the holidays, I got electric bikes because I'm now an e-bike fanatic. I love my e-bikes.
So is it just help you or does it do it?
Well, it's pedal assist, which means you have to pedal for it to do anything, but you don't have to pedal hard. You just kind of go like this and you're going 20 miles an hour uphill. It's like, ooh.
Do you adjust the aid?
Yeah, there's 5 steps. So step one is kind of most like bicycling with a little help, kind of what you think an e-bike is. Step 5, you start to pedal and you go, it's so fun. But in America, I don't know what the rules are in Canada, but in America, you can only go 20 miles an hour on this thing or it's no longer a bicycle. It's a
what?
Scooter.
Oh.
Or a moped or something. So 20 miles an hour.
Do you have to have a license?
It gets more complicated.
For a scooter,
Yeah. So 20 miles, but people hack these all the time. But you don't want to go 30 miles an hour on a bicycle. That's just dangerous.
Sure you do.
Well, you can downhill if you want, but it's fun. It's really fun. I love it. I'm a big fan. I went to Rad Power for the first two, and I'm still waiting for my Super 73, but that's been held up by these tariffs. So I ended up just getting a couple of Rad Powers, and they came very fast. But these are really cool little bikes. They're really fun to ride. Highly recommend them. They're going to have a big $200 off Black Friday sale if you're interested.
Nice.
They're not an advertisement.
How much does it cost?
I paid $1,600. I think there's the Rad Rover. This is the one Lisa likes. Got $300 off. So that's got.
They're not bad looking.
I'm
bikes.
Told.
Oh, they're so
there's
cool.
There's places where you. I think they're going to start renting them in New York. In addition to
city bikes.
City bikes.
These. Electric bikes are the future. I mean,
I thought
you need to
were
have your Hoofding.
I think I might need a Hoofding now.
Because I get upset with people in New York. You're in New York. You're going to get killed and people don't have helmets on.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I wear a helmet, but a helmet is really just, you know, an eggshell for the brain.
Yeah.
So I think I'm going to have to get leathers.
You need a body Hoofding.
I need a whole Hoofding. Hoofding.
Yeah, like a Michelin man kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll wear my puppet jacket. So here it is, ladies and gentlemen.
Wow.
The portal is here.
Oh, my Lord. It's huge.
It's huge.
That thing is huge.
This
Holy
is
cow.
The Facebook device that's designed.
Facebook isn't just in your home. It took over your home.
That's a big screen.
Well, and the other thing is, of course, you have to have a Facebook account. Although, as I found out, because I had, as you know, deactivated my account. As I found out, if you deactivate your account, oh, you know what? It's
when did you deactivate it?
Right after I logged in. So, actually, I can't demo it. I guess by unplugging it, it doesn't have any memory. It now needs me to log back in and everything.
Oops.
So I'm sorry to say I won't be able to give you a full demo.
What's that, like a 12, 13 inch screen?
It's a wide screen and it rotates. And actually most of the time you're going to use it like this because in the portrait mode, because then you can see the whole person's body and face.
It's a, hold it up like it's a phone. It's a it's the world's biggest phone.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm here. Hello. It kind of looks like the 17-inch Tesla screen. It's pretty big.
Yeah, it does a bit. Yeah, yeah.
So the idea of it is, I guess, okay, so this is going to be a process because I have to reactivate my Facebook account, log in. Then you can deactivate because it's using Messenger. Well, what Facebook doesn't really kind of emphasize.
They never delete your account.
Facebook Messenger doesn't stop working when you deactivate your Facebook account.
Oh, really? Interesting.
So... if you, and I'm going to do a full review on the new screensavers. I'll have it all set up again. But if you deactivate your account, you don't get your pictures. Otherwise, it's a very nice slideshow of your Facebook pictures. You choose the topics or the people or the folders from Facebook. And so you get, it's got time of day. It's got a, and then you, it's got a Amazon's Echo built in. So you can use, do some Echo things. And if you want to call, you say, hey, Portal, call Jeff, and it will call you, and it'll do a video call. This is a very high-def camera. It's a 4K camera. And at first...
And it follows you, too, right?
Well, and at first everybody thought, oh, ha-ha, that's creepy, a Facebook camera that follows you around. And it does. It very slowly follows you around. But what I realized is that's not the real threat here. The real threat is Facebook has a wide-angle 4K picture of your room at all times.
Handy.
So following you is just a side effect of how high resolution this is. So it could just take a portion of that and you know, as you move. And it does a good job. It follows you around slowly.
So, the I think it was the Wall Street Journal. Their review was, this would be a great device if it came from literally
anybody. Russell Holly in Android, at Android Central said it's his favorite way to video chat. It's a heck of a lot of fun. Yeah, it would be so much cooler if it didn't come from Facebook. But, I mean, it's also expensive. Yeah. The little one that Russell's using is $200, but this giant one's $300. The sound quality is pretty good. It does have Amazon's Echo in it, so that's kind of cool. Although, you can't do things like watch YouTube videos. The only thing the video is good for is video conferencing. So full review. I got two of them because I foolishly thought you had to have two. But fact, you can call anybody with Messenger and do a video phone call. So you don't really need two of them. But I got them. Anybody want to be on a permanent line? I think I'm going to send one to my mom.
It's good because otherwise, you know, there'd be only three people in the world you could call who chose to buy that.
But everybody has Facebook Messenger. I called Lisa. And she didn't even know I had it, and she just picked up on Facebook Messenger on her phone. And so I was able to see her and everything. It does come with a handy-dandy privacy cap for the camera, which I've already lost.
You put it on the desk, I thought.
It's just a piece.
You did, yeah.
It's just a piece of plastic. Oh, here it is. Yeah, yeah. It's just literally a piece of plastic.
That's otherwise known as an afterthought, Leo.
Better than duct tape.
And privacy is always an option. You just put it right over... that there, and then no one can see you from
it's
Facebook
the video cameras. Chastity belt.
Yeah, I suppose the microphone still works, but maybe not. I think it's kind of cool. In the Russell Holly's review, he talks about the good things, and he says, among the bad things, Facebook has partial access to a camera and microphone in my house. But I don't think, I mean, honestly, I don't think Amazon's listening to you.
What are they going
to
do?
I don't think Google's listening to you, and I don't think Facebook's listening and looking at you. But nevertheless, the optics, if you will, are not.
I remember when, do you remember when the first reports came out that AT&T had allowed the NSA to to basically tap into one of its main lines, and they were basically, you know, recording.
Yeah, they had a room in the San Francisco switching office.
Yeah, so I remember talking to someone at the time, and like when the news first started coming out, and like if you actually did that, there would be so much data.
You can't.
There would be no way you could A, store it, B, search it, C, do anything with it. It would just be impossible.
All right. I'm going to log in just so you can see it work.
That looks really heavy.
Yeah, you're not. It's not portable. It has a handle, but it's not that heavy, but you're not going to carry it around.
It's a big box.
It's ungainly. Yeah, that's what it is. So you're not going to carry it around. You're going to put it somewhere where you want to make, make video calls. You got to go to facebook.com/device and then enter in this code, WFYQMY. And then don't ask me to confirm my login again. Okay. Confirm. And I think I'm logged in. Success. Now I can show you.
There you are.
There I am. It has Pandora and Spotify on it. I'm going to call this one Kitchen because that's where it's going to end up.
Oh, I thought you were going to call me.
Yeah, I can call you. Should I call you?
Sure. Hold on. Let me just see what if I call you?
I don't know what'll happen. That's it.
Let's give it a shot.
You want to see how the smart camera works? Here's how the smart camera works. Turn on the camera and microphone. Okay.
It says it's calling you.
Oh.
It is.
Yeah, well, I hear something.
How do you answer it?
Well, I'm...
Wait a second.
Don't do anything
yet. Was it calling you?
Don't do anything yet.
No, I was calling... No, I was using text. Okay, hold on.
Don't do anything yet.
No, I wasn't. It wasn't me.
Tap the center button on the top of the portal to turn them on.
Now I'm calling you.
Oh. Hi, Jeff.
Hello, Leo.
Look at that. I got double Jeff.
Wow.
See, I thought I could really use this as the for the show. Now watch. I know. Okay, so watch. Now you see me? Now watch, I can dodge out of the way, and the camera will follow me slowly.
Only you can see that, though.
I know, but we're setting a camera up so that you can see it. Here we go. So as I move around, the camera, because it's just a slice of the 4K camera.
I see.
It's following me. I can't get away from it. But it doesn't move real fast, because otherwise... But this is the best part. Ready, Jeff? Get ready for this.
Okay.
You're going to like this.
Oh, no, not that.
Yes, this. Come on. Do it. Do it, man. Do it. Do I have to drag it? What is this story?
Is it filters?
Yeah.
Is it going to...
Hello, Jeff Garvis. What do you think? Hello. Hello.
It's actually very good.
It does a very good job. Now, I think Apple does similar things, but what it's doing is I'm putting faces on. It's kind of a Snapchat filter effect. And
I wonder where they got that idea.
Yeah, yeah. Where do they think of this? There was some scary Halloween filters. I can't find them.
I can't put filters on though.
Yeah, you can.
Where are they?
They're in there.
I don't see them.
They're in there somewhere.
Hey, Jeff, come on over. We're having a party.
Where are they? They're not there. I can add people? No, yeah, I don't want to do that. Oops. Can you see? I lost you.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no, I lost you.
Can you see the tears coming out of my eyes?
Oh, no, I can't find you anymore.
Don't show Jeff. Just show me. There you go. So you get the idea. Here's a strawberry hat.
It's your hoofding.
It's my hoofding. I got my hoofdings on. Kitty cat. Hi, Jeff.
It's amazing what technology can do.
How useful it is. What life would be without this?
So, I mean, this is kind of cool.
This is pretty well done, actually.
Gone noir. The face recognition is very good, yeah. Yeah, the Blues Brothers. What do you want for nothing? Nice. Rubber biscuit? I don't know what this one will do. Or why.
Okay.
Apparently, I have a, looks like a panda bear on my head. Flying an airplane. It's my airplane hat. Here's a, for relaxation, there's a cat. It is very realistic.
Wow. You know?
It is.
What do you think, Jeff?
I like it. I like it.
I could turn it. I could turn it this way. Although I think you're mostly going to want to use it that way.
I'll turn the same thing.
Yeah.
Oh, funny. I rotated me. You
should leave yours. Okay. In horizontal. Leave yours in landscape mode. Anyway, I don't know what do you think?
It's actually pretty.
I don't
cool.
mind face. I don't. I honestly don't fear Facebook. In my, you know, spying on me. Why would they? What would they gain?
Yeah, why would
you know? I think though that they, you know, clearly this is a product they had for a while, and they just kind of finally said, "There's no good time to put this out. Let's just put it out now."
Let's say if it's not popular, we'll blame it on Elliot Schrag.
Right, it's Elliot, the outgoing portal guy.
Tom said,
"This is my favorite one.
It's the first use of AI." Augmented AR.
Yeah.
That kind of just
it's pretty good.
Fluidly fits.
Yeah, obviously. I mean, one thing Facebook does have is really good engineers. And I wonder if Colleen Kelly, our former video engineer who works at Facebook now doing a lot of video stuff for them, I wonder what her hand was in this.
Because well, she works at Facebook.
Yeah, she works at Facebook. One
YouTube.
Of the things that we really wanted to do with our avatars, you know, when for those of you who've seen our video, we have Jeff and Matthew in television screens, but they're in landscape mode. I really prefer to have them in portrait mode.
Mm.
And I asked Colleen, I said, can we do that? And she said, she looked into it and she said, not really. You'd need some pretty expensive gear. And I find it interesting that this is really designed to be in portrait mode.
Mm-hmm. So Leo, you're going to send those to all of us then for Christmas. Is that the deal?
You know what? The only reason my initial thought was this would be awesome for the show. I just put these on the table with me. And I guess we just do it like that. But I realized that there's no way to get a feed back to you except from this camera.
Yeah, right. So I'm watching the wrong thing.
Let's and we don't have really a way to get a feed out of it except to shoot it.
Yeah.
So
plus, I don't want to put that in my suitcase.
Yeah. Well, there's a smaller one.
I can't do this, but it doesn't let me do these things.
You don't have those things? Oh.
No, I don't.
Ladies and gentlemen. You can't have a cat on your head?
They may be denying. They may be delaying. They may be deflecting. But they're pretty damn good putting a cat on my head.
And at the end of the day,
and at the end
that's
of the day,
what's really important.
Isn't that what matters? Matthew Ingram, the Columbia Journalism Review, CJR.org. He's their chief digital writer. You can follow him on the Twitter, MATHEWI. You may think it's a comment on math, Matthewi, but no, it's his name, Matthew I. Thank you, Matt. It's great to have you. Happy, you're not doing Thanksgiving, so just like happy Thursday.
We already did it, right?
Thank you.
Yeah,
yes.
So, yeah, it was last
we
month.
Did ours a long time ago.
So happy Thursday tomorrow.
Thank you.
Yeah.
No, this month is apology month in Canada.
Is it?
Yeah, they don't every thank anybody. They just apologize to people.
Every month is apology
every month.
Every month
is apology month. To Jeff Jarvis, I wish you.
That's very cool.
Oh, look, the cat is appearing now on our
the
studio
cat is
audience.
Appearing on their heads.
That's cool. Only one of you can be the cat. I could put these. Let's see. That's funny. Even if you're far away, it puts a cat on you.
Yeah.
Jeff is at, let me do it right. The Leonard Tow Professor for Journalistic Innovation at the Craig Newmark's Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York.
He blogs, if we were vertical, my lower third would fit.
Yeah, actually it would, wouldn't it? He blogs at buzzmachine.com and joins us each and every week right here. Are you going to be back next week or are you traveling?
Next week I'm here. Week after that I'm not, but then I'm here for the rest of the year.
All right.
Great to have you. Happy Thanksgiving, Jeff, to you. Is Jake coming home for Thanksgiving?
He just arrived. He had 8 hours from Boston, so I'm about to go out and say hello to Jake and Julia.
Well, have a...
And yours? Are yours home?
Yes, they are, and we're all...
Well, one of them is working there, yes.
One of them is right across the hall. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We do This Week in Google every Wednesday, about 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern. That would be 2130 UTC. If you want to stop by and watch live, you can. Live audio and video are available from a variety of sources, but they're all aggregated at twit.tv/live. If you're doing that, join us in the chat room, irc.twit.tv, so you can participate in the back talk. You can also sit in the studio, which would be a lot of fun. All you have to do is email tickets at twit.tv. We'll put a chair out for you. We had a great studio.
We have a full
audience.
House today.
We really do. We have visitors from Tinley Park, Illinois, from Brentwood, California, and from Mexico.
And they all now think they're going to get ham tomorrow.
They're all coming over for ham. Nice. Nice. You're all invited. So thank you for being here.
He's joking.
I really appreciate it. I may not be joking. I think there's going to be a lot of extra food. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We will see you next time. Happy Thanksgiving if you're in the U.S. If not, happy Thursday. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google. Bye.